This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Welcome to the Front Porch Braves Country. This is the Tomahawk Take Podcast off Leo's Rocker. I'm Alan Carpenter and joined by senior writer Fred Owens.
Hi, Fred. I woke up to do this, so pay attention.
That sounds good. So let's see what we can figure out about the Braves right now. We've had a pretty good week. They went 4-3 against the Giants and Dodgers. Probably should have been 5-2, except for a bunch of crazy things that happened in that last Dodgers game, but we'll take 4-3 most times, and that keeps the Braves in striking distance. After that, they've won the first two against Philadelphia, laying an egg tonight, but you know, you're going to get games like that occasionally. Still 2 out of 3 in Philadelphia. We'll take that as well. That's gotten them to what will be 3.5 games back behind the Mets. Again, this is pretty good. They were 10.5 back at the beginning of the month. Now they're 3.5 back. The thing that's concerning, Ian Anderson. He hasn't been pitching very well. What do you see about him lately, Fred?
Well, Ian's problem the whole year has been location. You know, in his other starts, he gave away runs early in the game. And then an inning or an inning and a half into the game, he suddenly found his location. And then he went on to do what fifth starters do, which is give us 5 or 6 innings. And the lineup picked him up. You know, he'd give away 3 runs. The lineup would score 6, and then he would give him another run. And so that's where he got his 4 ERA. I think it's probably over 5 by now. But that's how his ERA, 4.5 ERA came around. He wasn't particularly starting off games well. He was starting off games at a deficit most times. And that's because he wasn't locating. His changeup is not quite as good this year as it was last year. I think there's a little differential and loss of differential between his fastball and his changeup. And for Anderson to be what he was in postseason, he's got to locate and he's got to have that fastball. They've got to believe in his fastball and then swing at the changeup. And right now they don't because he's not throwing strikes. They wait for him to make a mistake. And you know, when you make a mistake, the guys like Schwarber, they're going to send it to the next county. And that's what happened tonight. The same thing happened with Jesse Cruz. He got 2 men out, 2 strikes on Schwarber. And then his fastball ran back over the middle of the plate. And it was last seen leaving the continental United States. Ian hasn't been right with his command and his location all year, and that's a problem because against teams who will wait on the ball and not swing at his stuff, he's going to give up runs that the lineup's not going to always be able to pick him up.
Yeah, and it seemed pretty obvious that he was having trouble with anything other than the fastball in terms of the strike zone. And as a result, almost immediately, the Phillies hitters seized on that and started hitting fastballs. In addition to that, the fastballs were just straight. It didn't look like there's hardly any movement going on whatsoever, which is why, you know, the only shot they had was to see if Schwarber's ball would hit the Liberty Bell and then they go after a taco or something. It just wasn't working, and you're right. He had a 4.6 ERA to start the night, and now it's 5.31. That's getting on the ugly side here. 7 runs, 7 earned, 7 hits, only 1 walk, but 1 strikeout as well. So that's just not going to get it done over just 2 innings tonight. So that does lead into another bit of a discussion here that we'll get to a little bit later. But before we do that, I want to clean up some mess from last weekend, and that's the Freddie Freeman drama. Because there was some interesting stuff going on there behind the scenes that sort of spilled out today that I wanted to talk about. You know, obviously Freddie was pretty well overcome. It kind of lingered longer than I think I've ever seen before in terms of a player returning to his former home, to the extent that Clayton Kershaw was kind of wondering out loud, golly, does this guy really want to be here? And I got to wonder if the rest of his teammates in the Dodger dugout are wondering the same kind of thing. And then the news came out today that the agent, Casey Close, was maybe, possibly, we still don't have the full story, but the insinuation seems to be getting around and seems to be confirmed in some sources that he didn't maybe give the last and final offer from the Braves to Freddie. And even if he did, he apparently didn't communicate it in such a way that would have enticed his client to take the deal. Ultimately, he's fired the agent. He is no longer being represented by Casey Close, and that seems to be its own little drama going. What have you heard? What are you thinking about what you've heard about this, Fred?
Well, I mean, first of all, I think the reason that Freeman isn't back in Atlanta is the lockout, because the Braves could not talk to him from the 1st of December until spring training, essentially. So when you put him in a position where the two sides are forbidden from communicating with each other, then you're sort of hoping everybody gets all the messages to the right place. Now, I don't know Casey Close. He's an upfront guy. He's got a hell of a reputation for being a great agent with Excel. He's Swanson's agent. He's got a lot of Derek Jeter's agent. He's got a good name in the industry.
Yes.
However, what appears to have happened is that understand how serious Freeman was about returning to Atlanta. And as in the result, he called Anthopoulos, said, I'll give you an hour to respond to these two offers, which he disputes, by the way. This has been reported largely by John Heyman, John Morosi, and others, that he had these two offers given to him in an hour to respond. And we know that Anthopoulos doesn't hold up to deadlines. Okay, if I've got to do this, I've got to do this now, I'm just going to go do something. So that happened, and then Freeman didn't find out about it until the news broke, which is Close's fault, because he had to know that when that hour passed, he didn't hear from anybody. He didn't pick up the phone and say, well, what's your answer? He let it go, and then all of us was done. From Anthopoulos' point of view, Freeman made him two offers that he wasn't willing to accept. Why? I don't know. I can't speak to that. There's a thing in the Athletic today that says if basically came down to Freeman, to Anthopoulos deciding that he wasn't going to go that extra year for a player of that age, and that he wasn't going, if he was going that far, he was going to do it for a Matt Olson. And he couldn't wait any longer because other people were in on Matt Olson. Yep. So there's that. Then the other thing is that maybe Freeman didn't make it absolutely clear to Casey Close that was his. He was going to play in Atlanta, and what he wanted was the best deal. And reminded me of the part in Chipper Jones' book Ballplayer, where he talks about the deal that kept him in Atlanta the last years, when his agent at the time, he had told his agent exactly that. I'm going to be in Atlanta. Get me the best deal that you can in Atlanta. And he and his current agent, which is also his best friend, sat down and figured, well, you know, it's going to be this amount of money and this amount of years, and this, I will take this. If they give me this, I'll take it. So they waited and waited, and when Chipper didn't hear about it, he picked up the phone and called John Schuerholz.
Yeah.
And Schuerholz said, yeah, I think we could probably do that deal. So Chipper said, okay, and he hung up the phone, and he called his agent, and he said, have the Braves made any reasonable offer that I could get me here to Atlanta? His agent said, I don't think that they've made any significant changes to the offers right now. I think we have more leverage, and we can do these other things. And Chipper said, fine, and then fired him. And his best friend took over his agent. They got the contract, and Chipper stayed in Atlanta forever. I think there's a confluence of bits. I don't blame individual on this particularly, other than if I could point a finger at the owners for the lockout. I think they screwed up a lot of teams' postseasons. But in the end, Close didn't communicate to Freddie that he was going to give an ultimatum to Anthopoulos. Anthopoulos doesn't live up to ultimatums, you know. And so he said, well, that's your ultimatum. It's your way or the highway. I'll see you on the highway, and left. And so for me, it was just one of these things that should never have happened if everybody talked to each other, but nobody did. Al Freeman's terribly upset about it. Now, I got something for Clifford Clayton Kershaw. Freeman's hitting 308, 391, 497, 888.
Yeah.
He has 9 home runs, 47 RBI. And so, Clayton, I don't think you have to worry about him taking care of his job on the field. He'll take care of the Dodgers just like he took care of the Braves. And shame on you for even questioning his commitment to his team. When he signed, Freddie Freeman's the one of the most honest people I've ever seen. He doesn't smoke. He doesn't drink. He comes out there. He plays the game hard for whoever he's playing for. And he will do that for the Dodgers for as long as he wears the Dodgers blue. They've got a great first baseman who will do his job and will do it very well. Gold Glover, team leader, and just a hell of a guy. And he's going to do that job well. If Clayton Kershaw had ended up signing with Houston, this offseason, would he have liked it and said, well, I don't know if Kershaw's really attached to Houston there. He was a Dodger for so long. When you sign that contract, you agreed to play and you're not going to go out and embarrass yourself. And I think Kershaw embarrassed himself by making that comment publicly. That's my rant.
Yeah, it certainly does not help things in the clubhouse when stuff like that comes out. That should have stayed private. That should have been behind clubhouse doors only if it was even said at all. And certainly you're right. The results that Freeman has put on the field, that should speak enough for him. Now, back on Casey Close, though, I mean, for me, it kind of feels like a you had one job kind of situation. He had exactly one job. His job was get Freeman back to Atlanta. I think he was trying, what it feels like to me is that he was trying to maybe not so much do that, but also trying to generate some additional leverage, which really didn't exist, frankly, with other teams, and trying to see if he can figure out how to get a different deal or a better deal by bringing in other clubs and pitting them against each other, when really his client had already told the entire world exactly what he wanted, which was to be back in Atlanta. And bottom line, he's fired Casey Close. That tells me who he believes. That tells me who Freddie Freeman sides with in all these arguments. It's like you wanted one thing, and the agent didn't deliver. The agent is now getting to pay the price because he didn't do what his client wanted, and that was to get him back to Atlanta. So whether it's communications, and I think you're probably dead on this, that the lockout didn't help anybody in this situation, but certainly picking up the phone would have helped. I mean, Chipper and Freddie know what the score is here. They talk to each other. They're good friends. Freddie would have known about that situation that you recounted from his book. So there was nothing stopping Freddie from actually making that phone call himself either. So I'm not going to put it totally on the agent, but I am going to put it about 80 or 90%.
He could make that phone call during the lockout.
Well, even afterwards, he had to know that things were getting dicey because, I mean, spring training was going to start in about a week, and he didn't have a contract yet from anybody. So he had to know that at some point really soon, the Braves are going to have to jump on something. And whether it was him or Matt Olson, he had to know that one of those situations was bad for him. So he could have made a phone call at that point, but I'm still going to put it 80 to 90% on Casey Close, and that's why he's been fired.
Yeah, I think Casey Close misjudged Alex Anthopoulos.
Like
you said, there wasn't any market. He had to go back to the Dodgers and beg for the extra year on the Freeman contract,
right?
So he knew he'd shot himself in the foot, and then he's backpedaling and trying to put Band-Aid on this. But I think that he expected Anthopoulos to call back and say, well, I'm not going to do those two deals, but I'll do this. And but he made the mistake of telling Anthopoulos A or it was B. And Alex said, I haven't got the time to mess with this. I think he just misjudged his his clients or the guy he was dealing with. And by the time he realized it, it was too late. Yeah. And his protestations on Twitter are, I'm not much of Shakespeare, but methinks the man doth protest too much. Yeah. I think when Freddie came back to Atlanta, he probably bumped into Alex here and there and asked a quiet question and got a quiet answer. And
he believed it. He believed the answer.
And he turned bright red and his hair started to grow in strange ways. And he went, then he got back to LA or got out of Atlanta and fired close. And I would have fired close a long time ago because I'm absolutely certain. He said, I want to be in Atlanta. Get me the best deal you can. And Close would say, well, I was trying to get him the best deal I could, but Anthopoulos had returned my call. And, you know, we're going back and forth. He said, she said, I don't know what's going on here. But, look, Freddie Freeman's going to be a great ball player in Los Angeles. Matt Olson's having a hell of a season so far in Atlanta. The teams are good. They've got good players. We need to move on for this. Really getting boring.
Yeah, and there were a lot of fans this weekend said, well, Freddie wants to be back in Atlanta. What if we traded for him? And I was like looking at that sideways and was like, how would that work exactly? And tried to come up with some scenario, even at a fantasy level, as to how that would happen. And I'm sorry, it just can't happen. There's no way to do this. I think it is kind of comical at the moment, going to baseballtradevalues.com. You look up Matt Olson and you look up Freddie Freeman and their relative values. Right now they have the exact same number, but you can't trade one for the other and get the same kind of value because Matt Olson's 4.5 years younger. He's going to produce more over the next 8 years of his contract. The Braves just aren't going to do this. I mean, the only scenario I could even dream of here is you somehow find somebody to dump Marcell Ozuna's contract on. Good luck with that. They would have already done so if they could. And then maybe Freddie could come back as a DH. But even so, why would the Dodgers do that? They don't have another first baseman. They need a guy who could produce like him, and that guy doesn't exist on the market. So they've got no incentive to do that. They've got him locked up at a pretty good deal, at least, you know, in terms of his actual market value. He signed a deal that is better than what the Braves were offering. So the Dodgers have no incentive. The Braves have nobody to trade in order to incentivize the deal to make that happen. And they don't have the money. So I'm sorry, it's just not going to happen.
Well, you know, I mean, first of all, Freeman doesn't want a DH. He's a first baseman. He wants to play. He said before that he hated DHing because he feels like he's out of the game. And good ball players don't want to DH. Good ball players want to be on both sides of the ball. And so, you know, I mean, I'm sure it's killing Bryce Harper that he had to hit without playing the field, knowing what was out in the field, that he could do that better than anybody out there. So the best ball players in the game, they'll take a day off in DH, but they want to play every day on both sides of the ball. And then until you're past doing that and you become Nelson Cruz, who just keeps hitting home runs, and he's going to be what 350 years old. But it's when you can't play on the field, that's different than I'm not going to let you play on the field and you're still capable of playing a gold glove position. So Freeman's not going to do that. He wouldn't accept that kind of deal anyway. And I don't know what the guy was smoking that suggested that, but it's probably pretty good stuff and illegal in 20 states.
And if you want to hang your hat on anything, well, after the 2027 season, when Freeman's contract with the Dodgers expires, then maybe they'll consider bringing him back for the twilight of his career or something. But until then, it's not going to happen. Sorry about that.
Well, we'll ask Braves GM in 2027, Mark DeRosa, and his manager, David Ross, if he wants to bring back the old war horse for a farewell season, a la Albert Pujols in St. Louis.
There you go. And, of course, by that time, Acuna will be off to different pastures. Ozzie Albies will be gone. And then we'll just have to see who in the current crop they decide to keep for the long term and can keep for the long term, but there'd be a chance that this team by then would be a shell of its former self, and maybe Olsen's the only guy remaining at that point. Let's move on to a different topic, and that is about maybe acquiring somebody else, though.
Mike Ford's pitching?
Oh, we're in trouble.
apparently, yes.
He is pitching. That is correct. He's walked a guy. He has gotten an out.
And is that a home run I saw, or is that yeah, apparently he just gave up a home run this whole guy. Okay. Well, I knew it got Mike Ford for a reason.
Yep, chaos has ensued. It's 14-4, bottom of the eighth inning. But you kind of expected that at this point, because we're at the, if you patronize our sponsors, we allow you to go walk your dog kind of thing. So
yep.
This is one of those games, but it's been a while since the Braves have had one, so don't fret. It's all good. They're still the only team in the majors that, well, as of last night, they're now the only team in the majors that haven't lost three in a row. So there's that at least. But you were asking, with Ian Anderson doing Ian Anderson things lately, which are not playoff Ian Anderson things, you were wondering, do Braves need a starter?
Well,
the Braves need a reliever now, too, with Jansen gone, and Matzik's coming back, but he has his velocity back at during his rehab things, but we don't know if he's going to stay back. Of course, we may have some other guys that are still getting hurt along the way as we move through the rest of the season, so maybe we need a reliever too. Relievers are easier to get than starters right now, especially. But what kind of guys you think that the Braves might be targeting if they were to go after a starter?
Well, I mean, I sort of, you're, first of all, you're not going to get Frankie Montas or Luis Castillo, because the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Blue Jays are going to be so heavy in on them, and the Yankees in particular have a minor league system that they use as a cash drawer. Yeah, so they can go out and they can get Frankie Montas and Luis Castillo. And those are the big guns that are going to be out there. And really, if you look at it, the Braves have Freed, the Braves have Morton, the Braves have Strider for now, and Soroka's going to come back. They need a guy who's going to keep them in ball games and preferably go five or six innings and, not give up a half a dozen runs every time out. And so you're talking about probably guys like Martin Perez out of Texas, maybe Hendricks out of from the Cubs, Zach Davies from Arizona, Merrill Kelly from Arizona, if you want to do that kind of thing. That's the kind of starting pitcher you're after, a guy who's going to give you six innings, keep you in the ball game, not embarrass you, not go out and do that. He's going to be a three or four starter. And on top of my list is Martin Perez, who's having a career year with the Rangers this year. He's got he's really just better than everybody else out there right now. Something like Martin Perez. There he is. Pull up my lock cheat sheets here. Martin Perez, 2.22 ERA, 2.59 FIP, and a 3.82 Sierra in 93 and a third innings pitched. He's having a hell of a season. He gives up no home runs. He's got a 52% ground ball rate, which suits our infield to a T. He would slot into that rotation very nicely and give the Braves a lot of innings and win a lot of games for them. And coincidentally, they have a reliever who's got a 2.02 ERA and 35 innings pitched this year and actually closed out a game against the Braves, and that's Matt Moore. Matt Moore is just having a renaissance. He still thinks he's a starter, by the way. He keeps telling people that. But every time he goes out to relieve, he just closes the inning out. He's only got one save, but he's been pitching really well. Both of them are in their walk year contracts. I don't suspect they're going to cost a whole lot. And those two guys would make the team a lot stronger. Now, I know Kyle Muller's in Gwinnett, and I know he's pitching like lights out in Gwinnett like he was before he brought him the first time. And I really hope the Muldozer comes up and can control that 95 to 100 mile an hour beast he throws. But again, even with Mueller coming up, you need a pitcher that can bridge that gap. And until then, it's going to be one of those guys, I think.
Yeah, it's not the time of year to start bringing up rookies that you need to count on for the rotation. And that's the gotcha here. Yes, he could probably do it. We don't know if he can do it. I mean, we had brought Kyle Wright up about 3 years in a row to try and see if he could do that kind of a thing. And he just struggled at the major league level until this year. So it's one of those deals where you really need to go after a veteran guy, somebody who's been there and done that and been proving his worth at the major league level. And that's the kind of guys that you were mentioning. I'm going to highlight Merrill Kelly of Arizona. If you can't get the one-stop shopping thing done in Texas, then maybe you can still get one of their guys, Matt Moore, and then pair him up with Merrill Kelly from Arizona. One of the things that I've been noticing is that over the last, well, basically the month of June, we've had a lot of separation in terms of the standings. Teams that look like they might be contending early on, Arizona and Colorado out of the West, were doing pretty well. They were above 500 for quite a while, but they have really come back to the pack in a big way during the month of June. That's happened in a lot of cases around baseball as well. So teams like Arizona and Colorado will probably be sellers now at the deadline. So I think Merrill Kelly is probably a possibility. He's thrown 84 innings. He's got a 7.5 strikeout per nine rate. He walks three guys per nine, but he also keeps the ball in the ballpark. He's only averaging half a home run every nine innings. That's actually pretty good on this top 20 or 30. I think that's the best number I'm seeing here. Yeah, it appears so. His ground ball rate's 44%. That ranks nicely with Martin Perez. So there's no real reason not to like this guy. 3.64 ERA, that's good enough for a fifth starter. In fact, that's very good for a fifth starter. I think that if you make Arizona a decent deal, you probably get him without a lot of trouble, because there, as you point out, there are going to be a lot of teams after those big guys. So the Braves might be able to slip under the radar and get a guy like Perez or Kelly or guys like that without spending too much in terms of their player capital.
Yeah, Merrill Kelly is that kind of guy. I mean, if you look at all of the Arizona pitchers, and they're basically all the same guy. Kelly and Zach Davies, they all throw a lot of ground balls. They keep the ball in the ballpark. They pitch to contact. They just don't get beat around Luke Weaver. They all just keep the ball on the ground and let their defense do the job. And that works better in Atlanta than it does in Arizona right now. And Arizona, I mean, not saying anything Arizona people don't know. Arizona's having a bad year, although they seem to give the Dodgers hell, which is, you go Arizona. But when you look at the list of people out there that are going to be available and what you're going to be able to afford, those are the kind of guys that are going to come in and pick it up. You're not going to sign anybody you're not going to pay for anybody with a long-term commitment as a relief pitcher. And I think Kelly's got another year left on his deal after this year. I'm not sure off the top of my head. Maybe that's
yes, he does.
Okay, so you get that guy, and maybe you got him for next year, or maybe you trade him next year. Whatever you want to do to him, what you've got to do is stabilize the back of the rotation. And for my money, you need to put a right-handed arm in the bullpen. Doesn't have to be a closer, because we've got people who can close. But it does have to be, I think you need a right-handed arm that you can send out there, and people aren't going to destroy somebody like Matt Moore. There are others around the league probably. I haven't really looked deep into this whole thing, but you look around the league and you're going to find better. Paul Sewald of Seattle, he's got a 2.6 ERA, I think, and he would do the job just as well. His stuff plus numbers are way up. So, you know, you're going to find guys around. David Robertson, the Cubs are going to trade David Robertson. You know they're going to do that. Paul Sewald, Matt Moore, any of these guys that go in the bullpen, pair them up with a guy who at the innings, who can take the innings. Then we have Matt Sett coming back. We hope that Yates comes back and is the guy he was before, but we don't know that. People coming back from Tommy John typically have a year where they can either, they either lose the control or they lose the speed. Typically the speed's first, it stays, and then the control comes later. Well, I know he's had longer to recover, but he hasn't pitched at the major league level. So I don't know how you can count on him. Strider's going to run out of innings in the season because he's never thrown more than 94 innings. He's going to push up onto 120 in the season. If you push him to 155 in the season, when he gets to the postseason, he's going to be worn out. You've got the same thing. You've got Soroka coming back. Hasn't really pitched for 2 years. So he's going to give you four or five innings, but he's not stretched out that deep into games. I know he's strong and mentally strong and tough. At the same time, the body will do what the body will do. And we can't, you can't guarantee that. I know you'd like to. I'd like to bet on him. I hope I can. But for right now, I'd like to go get a veteran, slot him in there, and stabilize the back end of the bullpen and the rotation.
Maybe what we ought to do is suggest that they go out and get a Kelly or a Perez and then push Strider to the bullpen, and now you solve both problems with one deal.
Well, that would work, I think.
That might be a way to go.
Yeah. That would work, I think, but I think Strider wants to start, but I can see him in the back of the bullpen doing that job if you can find the innings. With maybe you grab two guys. If you have to push Strider to the bullpen, maybe you go out and get a Kelly and I don't know, Joe Bagadonis to go with him and put him in the rotation. Maybe you pull up somebody from Gwinnett to pitch the fifth and sixth spot. But you've got to cover these innings without killing these young arms. You can't wear the arms out until they're no good next year. We did that under Freddie Gonzalez, and it didn't work very well long term. So we need to take care of these young arms, and we need to get the innings covered, and we need to get the bullpen stabilized, because I pray that Kenley Jansen comes back okay, but I can't guarantee that. He's not a kid right now. He's done this twice before, and boy, it scares me anytime you talk about somebody's heart. It just worries me to death. And I would like to have another right-hander in the bullpen. And Matt Moore fills that job pretty well. Paul Sewald probably does that as well. Looking at him, there's probably, Bass from Miami probably fits in there okay. So there's people who can do the job and they won't be expensive. But we need to move and get that stabilized so that it isn't Fried, Morton, and then who? And so you need to stabilize that, give them some stability there with the rod rotation in the pen. You saw what happened with Philadelphia when they didn't have a pen.
Oh, absolutely. We've been seeing that for multiple years now, and even now that it's better, it's certainly not what I'd call elite or by any stretch of imagination. And, you know, they've obviously got some other problems too, but the bullpen is certainly one of them. Quickie thing with Merrill Kelly, I did look up his contract, and he's on a deal that I think the Diamondbacks would like to just go ahead and shed themselves of. It is 2 years, $18 million for 2023 and 2024. So he's actually signed up for multiple years plus a club option in 2025. So that may still work out for the Braves. They've got Charlie Morton this year and an option for him as well. But if you think you need another starter for a longer term, he may fit that deal. Now, at the same time, if you're only looking for a rental guy, then we go back to Martin Perez.
I'm not sure Kelly is good. And for those two throughout years, that's my problem with Kelly is that he's 33 and a half now.
Yes.
So he's going to be 34 next year and 35. And I'm not sure that a guy who's been consistently a 4.5 ERA, in his career is going to be 3.5 ERA as he turns 34 and 35.
Yeah, I was about to quote his 2020 numbers, but those don't count. So yeah, he has been 4.5, overall. So this year actually is significantly better as far as that goes. So I don't know if you necessarily want to sign up longer term for a guy like that, particularly at $9 million a year. the point is there are options. I mean, this is not a season where you're going to have a Verlander or a Scherzer available to trade for. And yeah, obviously the Braves would have trouble playing in that kind of a sandbox, even if they did, even if those guys were available. But, you know, we're talking about Frankie Montas and Luis Castillo being the cream of the crop. That's it. Beyond that, you've got a whole bunch of other guys, and the whole bunch of other guys are not going to be that expensive to go acquire. I suspect that's the direction the Braves are going to go, regardless of the name of who it is.
Yeah, I mean, they're sitting right now. I mean, first of all, I'm not sure the luxury tax scares anybody this year, but the Braves have a luxury tax threshold right now of about just over $207 million, which is just a little shy of the first threshold. I'm not sure they want to go much higher than that. That's a hell of a jump from last year to this year. You know, I'd like to see the Braves have enough money to go out, let's just sign all these guys, and if one of them works, we'll just flush them down the toilet. But that doesn't work, you know, not in Atlanta. It doesn't even work in Chicago. That's why Theo left Hoyer with that mess up there, is that the owners up there said, we're not paying money to cover up for your mistakes anymore. And so, and Anthopoulos knows that. He tries not to make those mistakes, although, you know, Ozuna's probably the worst deal he ever made, and he may even find a way to flip that out of the way. But the whole point of this whole thing is that you know the kind of guy that Alex is going to go after. He's going to go after somebody that's undervalued that he can get and without breaking the bank, still leave him something to maneuver with if he has to maneuver for something big, and hope that it works out for him like he did last year. The magic that happened last year, and it was magic, hard to replicate. But, you know, this year we're not talking about any dark horses for the outfield. We're talking about Benintendi and Happ and those kind of guys for the outfield. Maybe you go to Kansas City and get Amir Garrett for the bullpen or somebody like that. You know, maybe Bradley Singer. Maybe they'll trade Bradley Singer. He's not been outstanding since it came up. Okay, he's just our pre-arb. Maybe they don't want to do that, but if you make the package right to do. There are players out there that haven't bright lights and bells and whistles going off around them all the time, and those guys come through for us, for the Braves, for Anthopoulos more often than not.
For those who think that all things were bells and whistles and celebrate all the way to the World Series last year too, don't forget there were a few bumps in the road in terms of player acquisitions. The Panda, for instance, after the first week, he kind of fell apart.
Almora?
Richard Rodriguez? Yeah, that relief acquisition didn't quite work out either. So, yeah, it wasn't a perfect record, and the Braves have limited resources, so they're going to have to do what they can with what they got and hope for the best. But, yeah, I think going after more proven quantities in the outfield is probably the best way to go, although they're going to also like to see what Eddie Rosario does when he comes back from Gwinnett, and which appears to be soon. You got to recognize that there are going to be others after Benintendi. I saw Philadelphia talked about today in those terms. Frankly, I'm not sure if the Phillies think they're going to be in the wild card chase or not. We'll have another month to figure that out. But none of these deals are going to be done in a vacuum. Other people are going to be going after the same kind of players. So we'll have to see how that goes.
Philadelphia, Steve Phillips said this the other day. This is a Dave Dombrowski team. His teams are designed to beat you to death. And if you don't catch the ball, then they've got to beat you to death more. And their main yeah. beater is now out for 2 months at least. And their bullpen is still not great, and they have two starters, and Dombrowski is going to sell.
I think he needs to. Yeah,
he's going to sell. And, you know, frankly, if I could pry Zach Wheeler away from him, I would. He's got 2 years left on his deal, but I don't think he's going to sell like that. I think he's going to try to move one of Schwarber and Castellanos. Good luck with that. And I'd swap him Ozuna for Castellanos right now, or Schwarber, or Reese Hoskins, or a bag of baseballs. But I just think that he's going to sell what he can. He's going to try to get some young players back to fill in that roster and hope he can develop and do something in the postseason. But it's a typical Dombrowski team. A lot of thump, Oh, I'll fill the bullpen later. Oh, the bullpen didn't work. Well, I'll do it next year, or maybe next year, or maybe next year. So it's just it's a typical Nebraska team, and they're out of it, and he knows it, and he'll be selling people off.
Yeah, Bryce Harper is going to come back maybe the first week of August or second week of August, and that's probably the absolute earliest that they'll see him. Losing him for about 6 weeks is a crippling blow for them. So
he should get that arm fixed now. He should get his UCL fixed now so he can come back in spring ready to go. This team is not going anywhere. Fix the wrist. Okay. Now if the wrist goes, let's go back in surgery and fix the elbow and the other arm. Okay. And let's get out there and get you ready for the next season.
Because he can't afford to come into spring training with not knowing how that elbow is going to react. You're right.
Yeah, this is just a bad deal. I mean, he said he's not going to fix it now, but somebody ought to have a sit down with him. The team is not going anywhere with you. It's not going anywhere without you. We need you for next year. Fix the elbow.
Exactly. Let's go to another topic that kind of cropped up within the last week, and that is that there's this confab going on right now about changing the rules kind of fundamentally, and there's a couple things that in particular that we're looking at. One is the pitch clock. Second is sizes of bases, and I think both those things, if they are implemented, right now it looks like they probably will be, would conspire to maybe help the running game of all the teams. Right now, the pitch clock in the minor leagues, as it's being used this year, is 14 seconds between pitches with no runners on base, 18 seconds with runners on base. And in AAA, hey, you get a bonus second with runners on base. You get 19. If you don't throw the ball within that time limit, you get an automatic ball called. If a batter is not in the box with, I think it was 9 seconds to go, you get an automatic strike called. That has certainly moved long games in the minor leagues, but the minor leagues really weren't the problem to begin with. It's the major leagues, and I'm curious how that's going to react. One of the things that I have seen in terms of the reaction about how things have gone in the minor leagues is that at least one of the Braves pitchers had complained that the running game is now something that he can't really compete against. It's almost impossible to hold runners on. You can't hold the ball indefinitely and try and see if the runner flinches or anything like that. You're going to have to go ahead and worry about the plate and getting to the plate much more than you are watching first base. The increased base size, if they increase the base size, I think it was about 4 inches they were talking about it. You've seen how many times we've got bang bang plays at second base for base stealers. If you add a couple inches, that's 2 inches less that they have to travel. And certainly we've seen a lot of plays where the tag and the runner arrive almost at the same time, and 2 inches is going to help the runners immensely, in my opinion. So I don't know if they're going to actually do this, but that may certainly inject a lot of changes to offenses in the future if we start this in 2023.
Well, you can't hold runners on. I mean, the base is 3 inches wider each side, so you're actually like six inches closer, 3 inches from, you know, on each side of the bag at first and second. They're actually moving second base back to where it's supposed to be. It's not really in the right place.
Yeah, it's too far away.
it never has been in the right place. So when they move the base and they make the bases bigger and they tell the pitcher he's got to throw the ball in 14 seconds, the runner on first base can count, ladies and gentlemen. he can count. And when that pitcher's got to throw the ball, he's off because the pitcher can't do anything at that point. It's rare that you get these guys by more than the skin of your teeth now. You make the distance shorter, and they're going to steal bases all over the place. Now, will the sabermetrics guys say, you know, you have to be 75%? That guy said, I'm 90%. Let me go. Because everybody that's fast, Acuna's going to steal 50 bases. Ozzie's going to steal 50 bases. There's going to be a runaway in base stealing out there that they will not be able to deal with. There'll be people laughing at this, complaining about it all year. The other thing that happens, and you said it won't, maybe it won't, but the first time Harper or Mike Trout or some superstar steps out of the box to adjust his batting gloves and the ball goes, the umpire says, strike three, you're out, with the bases loaded, that pitch clock's going to hell. Okay? The owners are not going to allow the players they pay $200 million for on the field like that. These guys have been playing this game this way for a long time. And, okay, maybe the kids coming up with the minors will adjust to it, and everybody will be hunky-dory. But you, how are you going to get Nelson Cruz to adjust to that? How are you going to get Freddie Freeman to adjust to that? Most of these guys are pretty close to it, but there are people who take their own sweet time up there, and they're pretty big names. And
Jason Hayward.
Hayward's not longer a big name, but Jason Hayward is one of the guys who does that. But yes. Anybody who steps in and out of the batter's box a couple of times, a pitcher can't step off the mound and walk around the mound because it's going to be a ball. And these closers, maybe the union's hunky-dunky with that. Maybe the owners just haven't woken up long enough to realize what they're approving here. The other thing is, how do they arrive at 14 seconds?
Yeah, that's an interesting question.
What is it? They throw dart at a spinning dartboard and hit double seven? What? I just don't know where they come up with these numbers. But we're apparently going to find out. So hold on to your tails and bet on a lot of stolen bases.
Yeah, I personally wonder if they aren't going to increase another second or two for the major league pitch clock if and when they come up with an agreement on this. I mean, there's a whole lot of guys who just have not adjusted to that kind of thing, and a lot of them are like human rain delays. I mean, Kenley Jansen, for crying out loud. There's that kid that we saw in the World Series for the Astros that went through a whole bunch of gyrations before he pitched. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, plays for Houston. You've got guys like that who've been doing this sort of thing for ages, and to ask them to do something different is not real good for keeping them doing the same kinds of things mechanically that they've been doing all along. And I don't think that's going to help their performance whatsoever. Then you got guys like Spencer Strider, who looks like, okay, give me the ball, let me throw the ball. So he's ideal for this situation. He's got no problem with it whatsoever. Everybody else, not so much, maybe.
Well, but Strider's a throwback because that – I grew up watching Bob Gibson and Sandy Koufax and Don Drysdale, and they got the ball and threw the ball, and the batters were very uncomfortable. They were very uncomfortable about that, particularly when Drysdale was pitching.
I was going to say, with Drysdale and Gibson, you were uncomfortable for other reasons.
Yeah, well, Drysdale was really the headhunter. Gibson didn't hit you unless he was told he was going to hit you. He'd say previously, if you get hit, I aim for to hit you. But they got the ball and threw the ball. This whole human rain delay thing has come on and on and on with expansion and holding base runners and the umpires. Walk up music. The umpires have always had the ability to start with 30 seconds. If you're not ready in 30 seconds, they can start calling balls and strikes until you are ready. They've never enforced that, so they have to make a new rule and put a clock out there so the umpires are able to enforce the rule that they've been enforcing for 50 years. I'm unconvinced that we'll see a 14-second pitch clock or a 15-second pitch clock in the major leagues. I'm not sure that once the owners and the players think about it, that they want it.
Well, this has kind of been a crusade of Manfred, so I'm not. I'm sort of leaning the other direction, I got to admit. I think, though, that getting the bases is going to be a much bigger deal because there's so many bang-bang plays, especially at second base. I think it's going to really unleash the running game, and I wonder what teams want to do to combat that. Maybe less slugging, and since we're also talking about getting rid of the shift and maybe more hitting, that might be a good thing.
Well, I if they make the benches 3 inches wider, that gives Olsen 3 inches farther to stretch. And what's sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander. They're going to have it makes it the throws to first base that don't get them by a hair are going to get them by a hair because they don't have to throw so far. And if only throwing it, it probably doesn't make any difference anyway. But it's going to help the runners more than it is everybody else. But I just think it's a lot of people trying to fix something that isn't all that broken. And there are unintended consequences to things, and I'm absolutely certain that whoever is telling Manfred this will work, I'm sure that he had a directive to go in and said, find a way to make this work. When they come back and say it won't work, he said, you didn't listen. I told you to find a way to get this to work. Now, when you give somebody that, they're going to find a way to get it to work because they work for you. But in the end, somebody's going to, there's going to be an unintended consequence of this. And they may not be able to, he may not be able to survive the unintended consequences. So
yeah, I think the bottom line is they saw, hey, minor league game times are significantly shorter now that we put in this pitch clock and nobody's hurting from any of these other changes we're doing. Let's do it. And maybe that'll
work. How long
work,
were minor league not. Games in the first place? How long were minor league games in the first place?
Yeah, well, they're a lot shorter anyhow since you don't have the same kind of commercial breaks that between innings, and that's really what's lengthened games is the advertisings. It's not the not the game itself in my reckoning.
Yeah, well, we played a 2-hour and 20-minute game in Arlington. I was at the 2-hour and 20-minute game between the Braves and the Rangers. Pitchers, every ball that was hit was on the ground or right at somebody. Great game if you're in for pitching, and it had a great pace of play because it was up and down and up and down and up and down and up and down. Now, when Manfred talks about pace of play, he wants the ball in play. He wants to see people running. I just think he has the wrong idea about how to do this. I don't think that if you gave real baseball players an open checkbook to do whatever they want to do, that any of this would be in there, would be what they came up with.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong. I mean, hell, what do I know?
Well, before we get out of here, there's an offer on the table we're hearing that Juan Soto has to be mulling over. Said to be 13 years and $425 million from the Nationals. Wow. How do you, I don't know if you walk away from that kind of money, but he walked away from $350 million earlier, allegedly. So I don't know how that's going to go, but that sounds like something that might cripple the Nationals. Of course, they're also for sale, so it may not cripple the Lerner family. It may cripple whoever comes along behind them. But you had some thoughts about that relative to Mike Trout, though.
The Angels have mostly Artie Moreno out there, the GMs that he pushed around, had the best player in my lifetime. Well, the best player in this portion of my lifetime, because I saw Mays and Aaron. But Mike Trout is a special ball player. He's been in the postseason once. Now, when in my youth, Ernie Banks was a special ball player. He never got to the postseason. And everybody screamed, that's a horrible shame. Well, yes, it is. And the Angels are spending money on dumb stuff. And now they have a payroll that is unsupportable. The Nationals, in the long term, would be far better off to trade Soto for a dozen prospects, and they would easily get that for him, to somebody who's going to be able to put him on a winning team. Because I don't think Soto wants to sit in Washington, D.C. on a losing team like Trout did for 10 years. I don't think he wants to do that for his whole career. He wants to get to the postseason. And while owners will say, well, we will put this team around you, the record of owners doing that is that they don't. They just don't. Moreno didn't do it. We've seen other teams. Colorado's not done it 2 or 3 times. Teams that have tried to do it have collapsed under their own weight. You have to understand what the total value of your roster is going to be in payroll terms. And if you're giving, I don't, haven't calculated that out. What is that? $40 million a year? $39 million a year?
32.7 million.
Okay. For 32.7 million a year. And you're going to bring in a guy like Max Scherzer, because you're going to need a couple of those guys at 30 or 35 million a year. And all of a sudden, three guys are making $100 million. And they have no farm system now to speak of. How are you going to generate the income to put those players on the field? Look around you. The Dodgers are suffering. The Dodgers have this huge payroll. People get injured. Bellinger's fallen off a cliff this year. Max Muncy, he ain't hitting either. And all of a sudden, the powerhouse of the National League is in second place behind the Padres or tied with them or wherever it's at today. But the team that was going to walk away with this is not make the postseason unless they get Walker Buehler back healthy and find somebody to go into that bullpen. They've got you. Money does not buy championships long term. You can win in a short space, but eventually you're going to fall down off that mountain. The Yankees did it. The Dodgers are going to look heading that way. We've seen this happen over and over and over again. And apparently nobody's paying attention. They want to win. I will do this differently. Yeah, no, you won't. because when you win like the Dodgers haven't had a top 25 draft pick in years. And they've traded away their good stuff. They traded for Trey Turner. They gave away prospects to him. They're going to let Turner walk next year because they don't care for him as a shortstop guy. But they're, and so you're going to have, you have holes to fill. Don't have that strong farm system where you can push those players up to surround one or two stars. You're better spending $35 million on two really good players, where the one great player who, when he gets injured, is out. I think it's a foolish idea, and I think if Soto has got his head on, what he wants is good pay and World Series rings. Ask Mike Trout how that works. Okay.
Yeah, that's the thing. If you pay one guy the moon, then everything else has to be a compromise. And you know, unless you're going to be a Steve Cohen and don't even care about luxury taxes or anything like that. But that's not the way things are going in Washington. And this is a team that is for sale. And I suppose they've made the decision that having that one asset in Soto is better than not for selling the team. But I got to wonder if replenishing your farm system with a whole bunch of premium players is the better way to go. And if they were to do it now or very shortly, I think they could get their rebuild started quickly. But that's not the way they're going.
I love Juan Soto. I love Soto because I think he's got the best swing and the best eye, the best zone control. And I think he's going to be a good hitter for a long time. But what if 2022 is Juan Soto? What if he is this guy all of a sudden? I'm not saying he is. I don't believe he is. But what if he is? What if you give him $33 million a year and he hits .220?
Yeah, then it becomes a Ryan Howard kind of situation all over again.
Exactly.
I'm curious how this is going to play out. He is hitting .224 this year. Maybe that's because he's sort of bored. I don't know. But he does have 14 homers. He is leading the team in homers. But still, .224. And if somebody's dangling $400 million in front of me with the year I'm having like that, I'm taking it. And I think that could cripple Washington for the future. As from the Braves' point of view, go ahead. Do your own self-destruction. But I think that's a bad idea as to how to proceed.
I want to see good players on every team. I don't want to go in and see play a minor league team, and that's just no fun. It's just not. And they want to expand two more teams. Come on, give me a break, guys. Where are you going to get the pitching for this? I mean, you know, what, you go bring Charlie Huff out of retirement? What the hell? This expansion deal. These people who want to tell me there's plenty of pitchers in the minor leagues who can start in the major leagues now. Show me those guys, because if those guys are there now, why aren't they pitching for teams? Every team needs starting pitchers.
Exactly.
Every team could use two more starters. And if there's enough starters out there to fill two more teams, that's 12 more starters. Gee whiz, we could give every team a starter. I just don't see them. I remember the first expansion, and it wasn't pretty.
Yeah, and in fact, you've been an advocate for a while of actually contracting teams.
That was the only good idea Bud Selig had.
Well, I think that's probably enough ranting for tonight. We need to save some rants for the next week, so let's get off the porch. This rocker's kind of giving me an itch anyway, so let's
please don't scratch it.
I do not want to, let's not do that. We'll stop here, and thank you all for listening in. Do us a favor of checking on our writer on TomahawkTake.com. For now, this is Off Leo's Rocker. Fred and I thank you for hearing out these two grumpy old men. We'll see you next time. Off Leo's Rocker is a podcast presentation for the fans of the Atlanta Braves. It's brought to you from TomahawkTake.com and Fansided LLC, the latter of which is a subsidiary of Minute Media, Inc. Opinions expressed on the show today are solely those of the participants, since Minute Media maintains plausible deniability of everything we're doing. In other words, they don't listen to us. All rights reserved. All of the musical selections used in this episode come via rights outright purchased by TomahawkTake.com. And hopefully that's the only use of the word outright that involves us this week. Thanks for tuning in to the podcast today. We trust that if somebody ever waves a $400 million contract in front of your face, that your only reaction is, "Give me a pen, quick." But in the meantime, let's just go watch our Braves chase down those pesky Mets. And we'll make sure the front porch is cleaned up for your visit next week. See y'all then.